Welcome to SharePoint at Microsoft Subject Matter Expert, or SME, Roundtable. Hi, I'm Sherry Battine. I'll be your host today. We are the IT Showcase team, and we love to talk to you, our customers, about how Microsoft does IT. Today, I'm here with many of the experts from that run SharePoint and Office 365 at Microsoft. This is your opportunity to ask direct questions of our SMEs and receive candid answers. We'd like to learn a little bit about you, too, so we've just posted a question in your browser window about where you are on your cloud journey for SharePoint. As you answer that question, your responses appear on a monitor in front of us, and this is how this we'll use this information to help shape the answers to your questions. You can start posting your answers now, and I would like to ask our SMEs to introduce themselves. So we'll start with Darren.
Hey, I'm Darren Moffitt. I'm a service engineer with Microsoft, focusing on Office 365 and SharePoint Online.
My name is Jared Shockley. I'm a senior service engineer focusing on moving Microsoft IT to the cloud onto Office 365 and Azure.
Hi, I'm David Johnson. I'm a senior program manager architect responsible for our Office 365 services and helping our businesses make the best value of solutions on SharePoint Online and 365.
My name is Sam Crutz, and I'm a senior program manager here in MSIT, working today on SharePoint, specifically in the publishing area, Office Graph, Delve Profile, and Search.
While you post your questions to our SMEs, you can also give us feedback for the product team. We love to take your feedback and pass it along, so please feel free to enter that as well. We just launched Microsoft Teams to general availability yesterday, and we've been using it for a while at Microsoft. So I wanted to start off by asking our panel what you think about Microsoft Teams. What should our customers know about Microsoft Teams?
Sure, I'll start off on that one. So first off, really excited. You know, we've been using it internally for a little bit now, since just prior to the original, when we went into preview. And there's a lot of excitement internally. I mean, you've got persistent chat, you've got the ability to have channels, it's got the groups integration, SharePoint integration. It's been a really good launch for us here internally. So,
yeah, I'd say the whole key of this is it's about the suite, because Teams provides that persistent chat experience on top of the group's services underneath. So the very way you get create a SharePoint site now, or an Office group, or I should say an Outlook connected group, you're getting this, you can also get this Teams group with the Teams experience on top. So when you have a new project or new team working on something or other, you can get the Teams experience and still have a full benefit of that SharePoint site in and outside of Teams. And in fact, anytime you save a file in Teams, you're saving it into that SharePoint site, and therefore gets all the compliance benefits of that SharePoint site. I've got all the e-discovery, DLP, and other regulatory compliance issues addressed because it's still Office 365 SharePoint. Teams is simply sitting on top of that.
One of the great things, though, is the development capabilities now with it, being able to use things like bots, being able to use ways to interconnect it through Flow and Power Apps and those sorts of areas to make Teams kind of a central hub, but it can then reach out to other systems as well.
Right.
So that full integration is a wonderful thing to have.
I think the biggest value-added feature in Teams was the ability to put animated GIFs and memes.
We're going there.
We're going there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, often you're on your phone and you want to have to type a long-winded response to a manager. I mean, you don't have to do that with Teams. You can put it a cute cat, maybe, saying yes, or there's tons of Nicolas Cage memes in there as well. There's stuff that might not even be workplace appropriate, but you can do that with Microsoft Teams. It's a feature we haven't had in a product before besides email.
So what about Teams that already had a SharePoint site set up?
So one of the nice things is, assuming I created a SharePoint site as a group connected to SharePoint site, I can now take that group, which is an already existing SharePoint site, and kind of up-level it, add the Teams capability to it. So as opposed to me creating a new group in Teams, I can take an existing group created maybe in SharePoint or Outlook and then add Teams capabilities and the chat capabilities and suite to that existing group. And therefore, the files they have on that SharePoint site persist and are still there for that team to work with.
One of the other nice things that ties it all together is being able to how groups is an underlying feature across all of Office 365, including into areas like Power BI. You can actually publish dashboards to a group into a specific group workspace, and that makes it a lot easier, especially when you have some fellow employees that don't know how to publish to just their team.
When I think a fundamental thing for us anyways was employees don't always necessarily understand the security boundaries. And so you're setting up SharePoint permissions and you're kind of managing, and yeah, of course you still have the power of SharePoint permissions in groups, but the nice thing about the group and what Teams does with that group is you're providing that team dynamic of here are the members of this, and it basically replaces that DL and the what used to be the standalone SharePoint site, maybe a security group, and of the, all these other characteristics with one security space container for me to use for all these different workloads.
And it does tie back to Azure Active Directory.
Yeah.
It can be used.
That's exactly
all over
what this
the
is.
Place.
Yeah. In fact,
as a security group and a DL, like you said.
From a manageability standpoint, having everything under Azure Active Directory has been a huge improvement. Where before I would have to either have different sessions loaded up or have to go to different areas, or even on a security standpoint, forensics investigations would take me across multiple products and portals. Now, you know, we can kind of focus our fire on Azure Active Directory and managing it from there. And that really cuts down on how much overhead we have when we're managing our products.
Okay, that sounds great. Delve Search and SharePoint Search are really good. Can these search technologies be extended to other 365 apps, specifically Outlook on the web, where search is not very good?
So that's actually a great question. So I will say this. Where do you get the benefits of that search state? Obviously, you already get it in Delve. You already get that in SharePoint Home, you know, all the goodness that comes from Office Graph-powered search. But we're also starting to see it show up in other areas as well. So we've got it showing up in things like you're typing in a name into Skype or into Exchange in the browser. You'll see that the names of people that you already work with show up immediately. So those are coming in. Now, I think the thrust of the question is really around having that search start to show up as a replacement, say, for enterprise portals and enterprise search centers and that sort of thing. There is work being done in that area. I think we're allowed to say that. And there's investments being made to bring the best of the Office Graph-powered search to the enterprise search center. But there's nothing further than that we can share today.
The other thing I would add to that is things like OneNote, correct me if I'm wrong, OneDrive for business, show documents, for example, that maybe even come in via an attachment. So if I get an email attachment, those attachments will show up in my Dell profile because basically, hey, I want to see the document Sam sent me 2 weeks ago. I just don't remember it. I can't find it. I go into my Dell and I not only find the documents that he shared with me in SharePoint, but I can find the document shared with me in Outlook as well.
Yeah, that's actually a really great point. So if you go to your own Dell page, and at the top there you've got the section that shows things I worked on. If you go into there, you'll see attachments from your email, from your inbox. And so not only can you find things that were sent to you or that you sent yourself an email, but also you can open them up right in there inline. It's actually really cool, and I'd encourage everyone to give it a try. It'll open the document inline with the email right next to it. You hit one button to reply. It'll put the document into edit mode. It'll put the email into reply mode, and you can make edits side by side with the responses in your email. So it's really cool, and so the answer is yes. The company is working on bringing Office Graph search goodness across the suite.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Delve now available on almost all the Office 365 SKUs, not just enterprise? It's also available for small business or the business premium SKUs for the small mids.
Yeah, I'll say that I'm not a licensing guy, but I believe that's true. I know that what we used to call Wow, we just lost a light here in the room. So that's what that bang was for everyone on the screen.
Nobody died.
And that light was really excited about Delve.
No death.
Yeah.
Delve Analytics, now called My Analytics, that's an E5 offering, I know that.
Right.
But I believe Delve is cross-suite, but I'm not a licensed.
I actually know because I have a personal small business version, and it's now available for the first time.
It should be available across all SKUs.
Which is great. Yeah. It's something I've taken advantage of ever since I first saw it available when we were dog fooding it, and I loved it, and I couldn't wait for you to use it on my own personal information.
In fact, Darren, you manage all our licensing, so you
unfortunately, I do. Yes.
Watch how that works for us internally.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, we moved over to E5 recently, and of course, as of yesterday, we have the new automated group-based licensing, which will be a huge help for those of you that do license management. If you're like me, or you're using scripts, automation, maybe a C# application you developed, or none of the above, but hopefully all of you will be moving to the new group-based licensing soon. It does give you the ability to basically assign your subscriptions and your licenses by security groups, which, of course, will let you be very granular with very little overhead. So maybe you want to roll it out to just your IT house, then you can license to an entire IT security group. Maybe there is an executive group that maybe has certain access to products that you want to get them to first. Then you can do that with a click of a button all through Azure Active Directory. So, going back to what Jared mentioned earlier, AAD is really becoming the keystone here in Office 365.
Now, with the group licensing, is that going to work with the automated groups that can auto-build based off of metadata?
Yep, we actually do use dynamic security groups. So currently, Power BI, for instance, is being licensed through a dynamic group that basically says all Microsoft employees with this type of special attribute, you get to go into this group. Everybody in this group is going to get a copy of Power BI Pro.
That's
so,
excellent.
Yeah, dynamic groups are fully supported with group-based licensing.
And Sherry, I just going back to the Delve search question, I just want to drop in one last thing for the developers in the audience. You can access Delve powered search through the Graph API.
Nice.
And so visit graph.microsoft.io. They just had a rev of the site and all new samples and all kinds of goodness, and let there be light.
Very, very cool. Extending these questions a little bit, is group the same across SharePoint, Team, Link, and Exchange?
So an Office 365 group is fundamentally you think of it as Azure Active Directory. You've got a security group, or you now have an Office 365 group. And that fundamental construct is there underpinning any of workloads, so that Outlook, so that group, within basically replacing the DL, because you've got calendar, you got the planner use of that group, you've got your, obviously, your team, as we talked about earlier, and your SharePoint site, if it's all group connected, yes.
Now, the one issue, though, with groups, and this is for people that are in hybrid or on-prem, groups are an Office 365 thing only.
It's an Azure Active Directory thing. Now,
yes.
You can replicate the membership of a group, correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, back to on-prem. And if I recall correctly, we do sync group membership back to on-prem groups, so our on-prem directory does list for groups.
Yeah, there is a back sync capability available. There is some limitations there. Of course, if you're doing dynamic groups, the back sync capability will top out, I believe, over 15,000 objects. So there are groups that we just don't back sync. Specifically the ones that we've generated for our whole company, because that can be 200,000 objects or more. So yeah, there is some back-sync capability. It'll give you the ability to kind of replicate a security group on-prem so that you can secure resources with it, but it's kind of the extent of it.
Yeah.
Right. There's no integration, though, between the product on-prem as groups.
Yeah.
Correct.
And so this is primarily a cloud offering.
Yep.
But being able to backsync at least the security groups could be used for on-prem LOB applications.
Right. Yep. Our goal is eventually to replace our former FIM-based environment that manages on-prem groups with security groups and DLs with 365 group management.
Okay.
That's the Forefront Identity Manager that we're trying to replace.
Thank you. Yeah. I was trying to think what the acronym meant.
We heard yesterday that Teams would not be available to education until sometime in the future. Any ideas on how long future will be? 3 months, 6 months? We are IT, and we can't always answer the product group questions, but I just want to put it out there.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, that happened, Caruana sent an email about that, and so I don't think we know any dates.
Okay.
That's the right
answer.
Yeah, we don't, unfortunately.
Okay. Keep an eye on news outlets.
Keep an eye on blog.office.com. They will announce everything there. It's one of actually the sites that I track personally, so I know what has been announced and what hasn't. Right. And they have a great RSS feed that goes into almost every RSS reader.
Okay. Does MSIT import any custom user data into the profile database?
We do.
We do, yeah. Wow.
Nice lead-in. Yeah.
So someone out there is talking my language. So let's talk about it in two pieces. First, what do we do today? So today we have an executable that runs and it pulls data from two internal data sources, one that has general employee about our employee data, and one that has retail store employee data. And we pump that data into the Office 365 profile, also known as the Delve profile, via the bulk import API. One of the things that we're working on that I'll go ahead and share, because you know, we hope to share this publicly maybe by the next time we have one of these, is we're building a way to delegate out update for certain attributes to partner teams around the company. So that way, IT doesn't have to own the end-to-end, but rather we can say, aha, you know, team in finance, you can update just these three profile attributes. You know, team over in say, RENF, real estate and facilities, you can update these profiles, and that way we get out of that business for specific needs, and that way they can use them for targeting and all that jazz. So yes, we do it, and yes, we've got some cool things coming that hopefully we can share in the near future.
That's part of our modern engineering migration of moving away from these intermediary applications that do data collection and then do update to direct API calls by all these data source groups then. It sounds like we're really pushing down that road in the Office 365 Delve area.
Well, to be specific, this one is an MSIT built tool. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's nothing in the product today that allows us to delegate, you know, update permissions on a per attribute basis. So
beyond the API, which allows us to build these tools.
Exactly. Yep. So our tool has tenant admin rights, specifically SharePoint role admin rights. And so it can update these profiles. And so we serve as that middle layer, and we are the gatekeeper.
But is that a web service that they call then themselves?
The partner teams will call an API we've built.
Excellent.
And then we'll call the bulk import API.
So it's moving to, as we move to a more modern, SharePoint's moving this way, and SharePoint Online and SharePoint On-Prem, a lot of web service driven capabilities.
Absolutely.
And we're driving the same direction so that our internal teams update our web service, which then updates the Delve web service.
And an example of use of this is, that, for example, our corporate portal uses news and wants to target news to, for example, various countries to say, you know what, these news stories are tagged for X country. That country data is one of the things, for example, we import, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. So today they use country data. One of the things we just extended is now we pull in not only country, but we pull in campus data and building data. And so, you know, Matt, you can imagine a scenario where there's a blood drive on the Silicon Valley campus, and so you want to target just those three buildings with a news item on our corporate portal. They'll be able to do that, in fact, this month.
That's amazing.
Okay, thank you. Can you control the features available in the Waffle to users on a granular basis, the Office 365 Waffle?
To a degree. It really depends on the licensing aspect. So if there is specific features you don't want turned on for your employees, yet definitely you can, even with the group-based licensing, you can turn on and turn off specific features. So for instance, if there is a feature that you don't want showing up in the Waffle, the quickest way to make it disappear from the Waffle would be, of course, to de-license it completely. You know, that will ensure that also if you don't want your employees using it, that they can't access it through, say, a direct URL. That is one of the key ways to control what shows up in that Waffle, though the Waffle is largely automated in terms of what products you've lit up for the customers and your employees specifically. So.
And you can add other apps into that Waffle, that your own business applications. You can add them to the All Apps tab, effectively.
What role does SharePoint Online PowerShell play in day-to-day SharePoint Online management?
Everything.
Oh, everything, yes. Yeah.
PowerShell is going to be important in managing OneDrive for business, SharePoint Online sites. It's great because David has requests for a lot of reports, so it gives us a quick and dirty way to kind of grab some metrics based on certain profile data. And so really we use it for just about everything right now.
And one of the key things when you're talking about PowerShell, especially with Office 365, not just with SharePoint Online, but the whole suite, is the patterns and practices, PowerShell commandlets that are available that can really make it even easier. And they are updated constantly. And thanks to PowerShell, you can just run an update command and get the newest versions. I know when they just switched from V1 to V2, you had to do a reinstall. But you could then, in theory, run V1 and V2 side by side, which is nice.
And Darren, correct me if I'm wrong, we use PowerShell to do things like, for example, iterate across folders, or if we wanted to fix permissions, for example. Like, we wanted to see all of OneDrive business sites that had the Share for Everyone folder, for example. We did that by PowerShell.
We did. That required a little bit of use of the client-side object model. But the great thing with PowerShell, especially as it gets more and more robust, is that there's nothing stopping you from, you know, either integrating PowerShell into a C# application or using PowerShell to call client-side object models. So, you know, in those particular cases, PowerShell is certainly kind of like the foundation, but we do end up having to utilize other technologies. But it's the one thing I love about PowerShell is right now you're not really limited to just PowerShell. You can call client-side objects and even cook it into applications. It's how our licensing used to be done. We wrote a C# application that would call remote PowerShell sessions for very specific licensing workloads. So.
And the great thing also, it ties not only to the SharePoint Online, but also SharePoint on-prem, and all the few farms that we have left on-prem, you can easily manage those as well with PowerShell.
Yep.
Next question. I watched the team showcase, and it supports a lot of third-party tools. What are the roles of SharePoint in it?
So all files, when you're working in Microsoft Teams, when you go and click on the Files tab, all those files are stored in that SharePoint site behind the team. So basically, think of Teams as a front-end UI that brings together a bunch of parts of the suite, including the OneNote, the files, the a lot of the integration across the services, and of course, including the persistent chat for channel, is all there within the Teams UI. But that SharePoint site is the same SharePoint site. I could go to the web URL of that SharePoint site, navigate to it, see the team news, for example, go into various libraries and lists, or go into the files on that SharePoint site in Teams and navigate them that way.
Okay, that's a great way to think about it.
Yeah.
How does Microsoft IT manage taxonomy at Microsoft?
Oh, good question. We have a very large, and Simon, can you add to this too? We've got a very large corporate taxonomy, several hundred thousand terms in our corporate taxonomy. Everything from our products term sets to various country term sets.
HR and legal.
HR and legal term sets, finance
term
sets, product names. I mean, industry for sales data and so on. So we have a very large term set. And think of it this way, that we don't mandate that people tag. It comes down to, if you're creating managed content, in other words, an authoritative portal, like a knowledge management system, maybe our sales portal, for example, or our services portal, and you really want that content to be discovered by employees, then we require tagging on that data via those term sets, maybe by country, region, or whatever the terms are that are associated with content that best describe it, we'll require that tagging there. And we do have a very rigorous process on managing those term sets for our corporate taxonomy. And its corporate taxonomy is not, in fact, just used by SharePoint. We use the corporate taxonomy for things like our internet portal. Microsoft.com uses our corporate taxonomy too. So we as a company have a little bit of rigor around this one, but it's not a mandated thing. If you want authoritative content, then you tag. If you want your daily collaboration content, you probably aren't going to tag. We're not going to ask you to do that.
Okay, but if you have, it's important to think through the terms that you want to tag your data with.
Yeah, I'd say that when you think about it, it kind of is a library and information science thing, mm-hmm. that you are trying to think about how are people best looking for the content. Put yourself in the user's shoes. How do you want to organize that content, and what does that hierarchy look like? And it actually is really critical because you don't want. It's almost like speaking different languages. You don't want different languages describing the same thing, because then you're not going to necessarily find it. You want that term to be consistent across all the ways it might be tagged and used. So you're absolutely right. It is something that takes a bunch of thought, but typically from the user's perspective, because it's the discovery angle that's so critical. You want to see How are people going to find this content? Is it via some sort of navigation, via search, via some refinement, or some filtering in a list? And therefore, or is it simply used for some database operation? I'm just doing a filter. But all those things are driving how do we think about those term sets?
Now, I'll just drop in as well, just for those of you who may not have heard about it, we've released publicly the hybrid taxonomy sync. So the idea is that if you're in a hybrid situation, I see about a third of our customers report that they're in a hybrid mode. Anyway, the idea is that you can master your SharePoint taxonomy up in the cloud, replicate that down to your on-prem farm or farms, and that way you're consistent company-wide and you have the same term sets available for all your SharePoint customers, both internal and external.
And that's an important point, because you really do need that. That in order for taxonomy to work well, you want the consistency across the company, irrespective of where your site sits.
Totally.
Now, since a lot of the folks are also showing that they're completely on-prem, one of the key things for us classically was having a taxonomy farm that all of our SharePoint farms drew from.
Right.
So that was important to get a single source. And that's, I know, something when I ran some of the custom portals, and Darren runs some of the shared portals, we were always having to use the same core farms. That way we didn't have to try and figure out taxonomy between us.
It also made it easier from a supportability standpoint. One farm, fixing one farm was certainly easier than fixing multiple taxonomy farms.
Exactly.
Yep.
How do you provide access to SharePoint content from non-Windows devices and platforms from Apple and Android?
I think right now we don't really restrict access from those devices. So today you can go onto your Mac and go to one of our SharePoint portals that are in Office 365, sign in through ADFS, and you're on your way. So we haven't stopped anyone from using iPhones, Android. I mean, I usually access it from an Android tablet. And then occasionally from a MacBook. I know that our LinkedIn friends, as Tobias calls it, use Macs almost predominantly. So we have a huge Mac user base now at Microsoft. And we've worked to try to support that from the get-go. I know that coming out with, what is that product right now from a security standpoint? Intune. We will be able to, you'll be able to have that granularity where if a Mac or an Android device isn't a managed device, you can restrict the ability to download. For instance, we can lock down that they aren't able to download or read, read-only mode, or if they are trusted, that they have the full experience.
Well, we can even prevent them if they're not a managed device.
So. Yeah, and if you're not a managed device, you can strictly prevent them. We haven't decided to get that far, although we are looking at potential scenarios where we put them into a read-only mode so that they can still get stuff in a pinch, but if a device gets compromised, that we don't have them getting full keys to the kingdom.
And one key to all this, of course, is we have multi-factor authentication no matter how you're accessing our services, whether you're on iOS and you're using the touch the fingerprint reader, or you're using multi-factor authentication with phone factor or the Authenticator app. Any way you look at it, you're always doing the second factor of authentication irrespective of the device against our cloud services. And as we think about this going forward, we're doing a lot with, as we think about classification of a content and therefore applying appropriate security and, in the future, conditional access controls based on that classification of the site and group.
Okay. Do you give guidance on when your employees should use SharePoint team sites versus OneDrive versus the new Office 365 groups or teams?
Yes, we do. So first of all, I would say, think of it this way, that the OneDrive is for replacing employees' personal stuff that they would have had on their machine. So we'd rather files not be on the device itself. Devices get wiped, things happen. The compliance is a lot better if a content sits on the employee's OneDrive.
DLP,
all discovery, retention, all that stuff is there. Now, that said, it really is for, I would say, one-on-one sharing, limited sharing. If I have an ad hoc need to share a file, and maybe I'm not ready to share it broadly, I just want to work on it and completely in my space, that's what your OneDrive for Business is for, and that's kind of our guidance. In fact, we've got an IT Showcase white paper on this and the very topic on when we encourage employees to use a OneDrive versus a SharePoint site versus a group. In fact, we should post a link to that, but we should showcase a white paper on this. And as far as a SharePoint team site versus a group, I would say it simply is this, that if you have a team, a project, where you're trying to get work done, we would generally say use a SharePoint group or a group connected SharePoint site is really the terminology there for that site now. The only exception is if you really want the customization capabilities that I'd say classic SharePoint has, or publishing capabilities that of course classic SharePoint has, but modern groups do not have yet. Those are reasons why I would use a classic non-group connected SharePoint site for those things. But really the 90% case now is go create a SharePoint connected group and use that for all your workloads, the Teams and all the other stuff we talked about earlier. And it's those remainders that use the classic Teams site when you really want to do that customization.
It's more the exception.
It's more of the exception at this point.
Yeah.
But it really comes down to the if it's employees' content and meant for them, OneDrive for Business. If it's Teams' content, goes on the Teams site or group.
And the white paper you're talking about, we're looking to find that loop, that link, and we'll get it posted.
Yeah.
Great. Are there new features on SharePoint 2016 related to PowerView? Do we know that?
There isn't anything specific to PowerView on 2016. I think we kind of kept that feature set status quo at the moment. And I don't think we have anything we're ready to talk about yet with PowerView.
Nope. So. I'm aware of either.
Okay, next. How does Microsoft IT ensure high availability of the SharePoint DB when most but not all DBs support SQL Server feature always on?
Are we talking in regards to SharePoint on-prem or SharePoint
on-prem? This is on-prem. So a lot of, I'm talking and kind of looking with Darren here because we've done a lot of the on-prem hosting management between the two groups that we were involved with. We were heavily using, I know in custom portals, we used heavily used always on for almost every database we could.
Yeah.
And I think it was SP1 with 2013 that made it so that SharePoint was aware of always on.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to contact our DBA to do failovers. The SharePoint folks could actually perform the always on failover without the DBA involved.
Yeah. SharePoint 2013 Service Pack 1 was the real game changer for that because it allowed SharePoint to be self-aware of always on. It did allow us to be relatively responsive in the rare event, I should call out, that we had a SharePoint SQL failure.
Exactly.
They didn't happen often, but they did. After SP1, it was very quick for us to fail over.
Most of the time when we did failovers was when we were moving data centers.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. The failover was our migration tool of choice when we went to different data centers.
Yeah, exactly. So for a majority of our teams, that's what we were doing from the standpoint of high availability. Now, what I believe both teams did is we did always on synchronous locally, so it writes to both databases, mm-hmm. and then we do an async to a remote data center for disaster recovery purposes.
Yeah, we did maintain, that's actually a great point, we did maintain a separate disaster recovery environment into a different geographical location.
Exactly.
And for that point, asynchronous made perfect sense.
Exactly.
And I think we still do for a couple of our farms today. We have DR environments where we do an asynchronous sync.
And the asynchronous is super helpful because you can have both the synchronous and the async all running at the same time. So you have high availability locally as well as disaster recovery capabilities remotely.
DR is ready almost immediately.
It's a lot easier than the old DR methodology that we had to do with log shipping, and then we had to break everything to run the DR. And that was when we had to do testing of DR to show, hey, this worked. Well, once you broke it, then you had to rebuild it back, and that was a major effort.
Yeah, that's a great point, because when we went through the log shipping drills, it could take us anywhere from 10, 15 minutes to half an hour if one of the steps failed.
Exactly.
With the asynchronous,
it's immediate.
It's immediate.
Yeah.
We don't have to test it as much, and our failovers have less likely of failing as a failover. So.
Exactly. It's been a boon for us on-prem. I'm curious as to what the product group does with Office 365. I hope they do something similar. So.
I suspect. That's why I asked if it was we're talking on-prem or in the cloud, because in the cloud we don't really discuss.
We don't know. We don't know. They just run it for us.
We're consumers.
We're consumers, just like you are.
We get promised the 99.9% uptime, and as a customer, that's all we're concerned about. So.
Exactly.
Okay. And by the way, we've proven disaster failover in the cloud, too, because we've watched it fail over at times.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So. No. And it's been very quick.
And sometimes it was planned, and sometimes it wasn't.
Yep.
Okay. Follow-along question. And we may not know the answer to this. When will SharePoint support current version of SQL Server, i.e. 2016?
I thought 2016 was supported. In fact, our SharePoint 2016 farm product posts.
Not on RTM.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again,
what we do may not be what's released.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yes.
I don't know what the current standards are. I know the SharePoint product group is really pushing to get things supported. There's a lot of great features in SQL 2016 that they want to take advantage of, and they want the customers to take advantage of in the on-prem world. I know some of it's also how it can interconnect with Azure potentially. So there's some real key things there.
Yeah, so hopefully it's soon, but we don't have a definitive timeline.
Another thing to watch for.
Absolutely. Again, keep an eye on blogs.office.com.
There's a time to plug blogs.office.com.
And roadmap.office.com. If you want to keep an eye out on all features going into Office 365 and on-prem, they do track a roadmap at roadmap.office.com, and they keep it up to date every month. Okay. So I highly encourage it.
Great. You're checking it, sounds
I'm
like.
Always checking it.
All right. That's where we get our information. What are some of the biggest adoption hurdles to using Delve internally at Microsoft?
I'll start off on that one. You can add on since you were here at launch. So biggest adoption hurdles to using Delve at Microsoft. So the first thing to remember is Delve is a search-powered piece of infrastructure. So everything that you would think about in terms of making your company ready to be searched would apply here to Delve. So that would include, number one, making sure all your content is properly secured. Like enterprise search, Delve respects permissions and will security trim appropriately and only show you the content that you have access to see.
So is that something you should announce to people as they start engaging with Delve?
Yes.
In fact, Delve does tell you, you see this content because it's for
and
you.
Exactly. And to explain the smiles over here, so our internal rollout experience wasn't especially smooth because we didn't prep our users accordingly. And so a lot of people would see some content in Delve that maybe caused some, is it fair to say, concern?
Concern, yes.
They were unaware of security trimming. So I think the very first thing is, number one, prep your users. Make sure people have their content secured. Number two, inform, educate the people that this is how it's working. It'll only show you the content you already have access to see. And so really, I think those are the key things.
I'd say for us, keep in mind, we went early. And so when we first did Delve, some of those user awareness capabilities in Delve would show you, hey, you see this because weren't there yet at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons why that got put in is because we quickly saw instances where, for example, HR employees would say, hey, I can see this content, but should I be? This is really content-sensitive content. And we say, yeah, you should be seeing this content because you authored it or someone in your peer group authored it and specifically shared it with you. So it's by design that you can see this content. But people get afraid sometimes when they see things in search or Delve because they think that's what everybody else can see. And I think that's the education point. But just because you can see it doesn't mean it's what others can see. And if you're really deeply paranoid, you can turn off your activity from Delve and say, you know what, as an employee, I don't want my Delve activity showing up to others. Remove it and hide it. Now, that said, that's not a good answer because when you think about the best collaboration scenario, you want your activity to show up because then you can see what people are working on around you. It benefits the peer group overall. It benefits that unmanaged content, the collaboration scenarios. So we discourage that, but at the same time, it's an option for people that are that concerned about their content showing up.
And I think the final drop in, I make fun of myself for having to use analogies, but I think the one true answer, so yes, you can turn off Delve, you can turn off, in fact, all the Office Graph-based functionality, but really the problem there is you're just turning off the light in the bank. The right way is to have a lock on the door, a lock on the vault, that way the bad guys can't get in. If you turn off the Delve feature, all you're doing is making it harder to see where that content is, but the bad guy or the people that might want to get access to that content can still get access to it. And so the one right answer is to secure it properly.
Yeah, I would think one of the biggest tips I have for Delve is from a security perspective is, educating folks that stuff shows up there. If you see something, say something. It may be that there is some improperly secured content on Delve, and as peers, maybe like, hey, David, this document doesn't look like something you might want me to see. And David would come back and say, oh yeah, thank you for telling me. I'll make sure it's properly secured. So, you know, the Delve does do a lot of security trimming, but one of the really cool things we've noticed is that, yeah, if there are documents that may be improperly shared, it does kind of get exposed to your peers, and your peers can be very quick to say, hey, I know that I'm supposed to email somebody and let them know, maybe you want to double check the security settings. And gradually over time, you'll see that people get more security minded. So it is a bit of a side benefit to Delve. Counterintuitive to some of the initial feedback we got.
Right.
I'll say personally, from when Delve first rolled out, it was a brilliant system for me because my role in service engineering, sometimes I was brought into projects late and I would have to react quickly. With Delve, I started seeing all these documents about all these projects of team members, and I can expect this project to land in the next couple of weeks. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I was able to prep and be ready for it because it was in Delve.
And that's a big thing too. Being somebody who used to do a lot of knowledge-based work for our support teams, it was always like somebody new on the team and say, great, are we keeping a knowledge base up to date? We've had less of a need to do that because, you know, a new employee or a new member of our team can go into Delve and suddenly they're seeing relevant documents towards their job, towards what I do, towards what our team does. So it's actually really reducing the overhead required to ramp a new employee up, especially in our line of work where there can often be, you know, 50, 60 projects going on, hundreds of documents for each project.
Exactly.
This is allowing the most relevant stuff to come up so they don't have to worry about, you know, a weekly report that's like 5 months old.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. Good points. Can we provide the solutions we use to govern sites?
Let's talk about classic site governance, because there's two types of governance. There's one, we think about classic SharePoint sites, where we built a custom solution several years ago against the SharePoint APIs, our Office 365 APIs, to manage provisioning. We collect metadata like classification. We then do things like scan for secure oversharing and other business rules effectively, and flag appropriately, and warn and delete the site or lock the site if no action is taken. The samples for those solutions are now all in Patterns Practices. So in Patterns Practices is a really good example on how to do provisioning. And you can go to dev.office.com and you can find specifically WAC SharePoint to find out more information around how to do a provisioning sample if you want. As well as there are some sample governance solutions that we put up there around how do you do things like scan your SharePoint sites for maybe with a specific classification for broad security groups or blacklisted security groups, for example. Those are things we do, and so those samples are up there. Now, groups is another story, because groups, Office 365 groups, the nice thing is, like with SharePoint, we had to build a custom solution to collect classification, show classification. Groups does that out of a box. So you don't need the same tooling to manage a 365 group as you did with SharePoint Classic. And so if you start to use groups now, you're going to get the benefit of define your classification scheme in the AD. It'll collect the classification. It'll display it in various workloads like SharePoint, Outlook, and Teams. And then other things are coming. And I know they announced at Ignite things like lifecycle management's coming for groups, so you won't have to do things like what we did with custom SharePoint lifecycle management, or expiration management of, for example, membership of, hey, you know what, I want to force the owner to review, is this membership still accurate? And on a regular interval, you can require that membership review, especially for external people. And those were all announced last Ignite. That's all still coming. We're, in fact, about to dog food a lot of these capabilities internally.
Okay. So. Very good. Do we support multi-factor authentication?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
And we talked about that a little bit earlier, but.
Yeah, we do. We run ours through ADFS. So for ours, it's a blend of anywhere between a username and password and a smart card, or a username and password and phone factor authentication. There may be a number of other combinations there. I know we do a different layer of certificates as well. So, for instance, if you do have the work pin set up on your Windows 10 device, you can use your work pin and your username and password, or just your work pin and, yeah. So there is multi-factor authentication. We use it quite extensively.
Or Windows Hello if you're...
That's right. Windows Hello also generates a certificate, so that also can be used for ADFS multi-factor authentication. We don't really use the stuff built into Office 365, per se, but that's because of the different environments we secure. We do have some LOB applications that don't necessarily reside in Office 365. So, you know, our idea was, what is the common denominator there? And that was ADFS. Yeah. So ADFS is where we decided our MFA home would be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. How does performance and availability of the cloud stack up against on-premises?
So I'd say it depends on what. And it also requires some, I'd say, tuning and thinking around it. That some workloads, like let's take OneDrive for Business versus My Sites. OneDrive for Business is massively optimized for performance, the sync client, and if you're talking about extremely low latency page loads, for example, on things like that. Modern team sites and groups, again, really optimized for performance, low latency, that's going to be better than the on-prem SharePoint would be, from that perspective. The other thing that they've released now on cloud is the notion of storing files for your portal on a CDN. So SharePoint will, you can set up your SharePoint site to redirect various folders, for example, Masterpage Gallery or style libraries, things like where you store CSS and JavaScript and images off to a CDN. So it, when you have a file from a SharePoint library, it automatically replicate the CDN. The CDN will therefore be replicated close to the user, you know, for example, in multi-region, so that content will be close to some the user, minimizing load times again. So those are all things that where cloud does make it better from that perspective. That said, it was an optimization experience. Like when we first moved our portal to cloud, let's take our MS Web portal, there was some refactoring involved to get performance right because some of the legacy classic SharePoint paradigms of doing things like content by query or structural navigation didn't. We're optimized more for server-side load on a high-performance dedicated server with a lot of caching involved. The cloud has a different caching profile and is not a single-purpose workload. It's meant for, you know, your entire collaboration stack, not just an individual portal farm. Like we used to on-prem have an MS Web farm, an HR farm, and so on and so on. All those farms, because they were dedicated purpose, had dedicated caching. Going to cloud meant your cache profile is different now. Move more towards the CDN model, move away from server-side generation of content, like content by query, move towards content by search, move away from structural nav or managed nav, things like that. You want to add?
And one of the key areas, as David was talking about, with the content delivery networks, the Office 365 team's building on top of Azure and Akamai, actually, is the CDN delivery agent. They're worldwide, so if you have a worldwide company or a worldwide audience for your Office 365, you can actually increase the speed of the page load just by moving those static contents into the content delivery network, and it can save a ton of time for the remote employees.
And the nice thing is now with SharePoint, the way they've developed it, you just configure SharePoint to say this library goes to the CDN. So from a user perspective, you're just uploading files into a library like normal. But then behind the scenes, SharePoint's doing all the UR rewrites and move so that that content will actually come from the location close to the user.
Now, if you're in an on-prem world where you have a large network across the world, you could take a look at utilizing Azure's CDN in the same way. If you have a single data center source, a good example would be like our US or our European or Asian SharePoint servers that are in the corporate network in those regions. We could still put that static content up into an Azure CDN and make it easier for the US or Asian teams to hit the European servers, for example.
Yeah, definitely. Azure does allow you to kind of maintain performance in a hybrid environment. You know, give you a good glimpse, at the very least, of what, of course, you can experience in 100% cloud hybrid state.
Exactly. And one thing that we're actually moving as MSIT to a 95% of our on-prem systems are going to be running on Azure, even ISVMs. I know I've been working with Darren and their team to move a lot of our SharePoint farms to run in Azure. One of the greatest things that we can take advantage of is the elastic compute capabilities. Mm-hmm. We can actually take a farm that, okay, most of the time it's low volume. Oh, we know it's going to have a high volume because of some event that's coming up and they want to use a SharePoint site on that farm. We can then increase the size of the servers for that farm for that event.
Yep.
And then roll it back when the event is
done. Yeah, that was the best thing, because, you know, previously it would be, all right, either order more physical servers, which can take months. Or if you were in an environment where you could order VMs, you would still have to order more VMs. It wasn't as easy to scale them up and down. Now, we don't even have to increase the number of VMs.
Right.
We simply just say, okay, we're going from, say, a D12 to a D24 for the next month while this blows over. And
yep.
Once the event's done, back to a D12. Or maybe where D12 was too much of a skew for us, we'll go down to D8. So, that was kind of a set of flexibility, which I know our CIO is definitely appreciating from a cost perspective. So.
So does our CFO.
She loves it.
Maybe even our CEO.
Well, in the end, yes.
In the end, saving money is always a good thing, and it is keeping everybody happy and making it easier when they ask us to maybe run an infrastructure a little more lean. It's like, okay, great, we'll run it a little lean and know that we can scale it up should we, hit a major event like our 1 week, one week event.
And one great thing also, as we're taking a look at that, running on-prem workloads on Azure in the cloud is when we don't have development going on, we can shut off that farm, save all that money, and just let it sit there, and then wait for the next project, bring it up, patch it, do whatever we need to do to prepare that environment.
You
for
can
the
have that all done within an evening. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sounds great. We are near the end of our hour, and I do want to ask our SMEs one final question, and that is, what is the one tip you want to leave our customers with today? And we'll start with you, Sam.
All right. I was hoping for a question to come up where I could insert a plug for what we've called internally immersive profile. So this is a new feature. This has been rolled out to SharePoint Home, and it's rolling out now worldwide to SharePoint. And simply put, we do user studies internally here in MSIT, trying to give feedback to our product groups on how to build a better feature. And this was the highest scoring user study we've ever done. So. I would go explore the immersive profile, and the way you most easily do that, once it's rolled out to your farm in the cloud, is to go, say, to a SharePoint Home or to a SharePoint document library, click on a username, which will bring up a sort of a modern view of the contact card, and then just kind of scroll down and hit, like, the org chart or hit see files, and that'll bring up this new hotness called the immersive profile, which is it'll take up the right third of the page, and it'll give you in context, without having to leave the page and have to execute a query, it'll show you all the files that person's worked on that you have access to. It'll show you a lightning fast version of the org chart. It's got details about that user coming from the Dell profile store. So to me, that's my tip of the week because that just got announced last week publicly, and I'm very excited about it.
Okay. I would say, self-service, experiment with self-service groups in particular, that your employees, because the nice thing about groups we mentioned earlier, it's one thing across all the different workloads. If your employees want to provision in Microsoft Teams or provision an Outlook connected group or a SharePoint connected group, it doesn't matter at the end of the day because you as IT, or you get the benefit of it all, irrespective of where it's being created from. And try it, because one of the things that I'd say that we've learned is that it drove significant adoption of our services to allow our employees to get what they need when they needed it. And the nice thing is, as opposed to building a standalone giant SharePoint site and say, you've got this sub-site or this sub-web under this other SharePoint site that already exists, we're just saying, hey, go create this project. It's your project, your team's group. Use it for what you need to, and we'll provide all the right controls on top of it ourselves, including the classification. So enabling self-service also helped us move away from the legacy. What we're finding now, going between classic SharePoint to groups, massive adoption of groups. Going from on-prem to cloud was enabling self-service drove a cloud adoption. So it really does, opening the doors for net new helps minimize work you're going to have to do later on.
I hate to sound like a broken record from the last time we had a webinar, but I'm going to go back to Microsoft Flow. It's changed so much, even in the couple of months that we've been talking about. I know, it's just amazing. I personally am on a mission to get rid of Microsoft Workflow Manager and get rid of the classic workflow system using SharePoint Designer out of SharePoint. Flow can be a super helpful system both on-prem and in the cloud. With on-prem, you just have to install a gateway, which there's a single gateway that can feed Power Apps, Power BI, and Flow, so you can run it against on-prem resources, not just SharePoint resources, but SQL databases and the like on-prem. Great thing about Flow is your users can then take advantage of Flow to do most everything that's available in SharePoint Designer. There is still a little bit that's not there. It's not 100% feature for feature. But here's the kicker. A user can build a flow, play with it, figure it out, and then say, I have this workflow, but it needs something just a little bit more. IT can then take that flow and move it into Azure Logic Apps and take it to the next level and make it do even more. Because Flow basically runs on top of Logic Apps. So we can really tie in. And I know I'm starting to see it within Microsoft, where we're seeing it in the HR and C-list spaces, our corporate external and legal affairs team. They are starting to use Power Apps. They are starting to use Flow to figure it out, hand it off to IT, and we take that as a starting point and then build the mobile apps and build the workflow engines that run on Logic Apps. Yep. But it gives the business a way that they can kind of, hey, this is what I want. And it'll run initially for them until we come up with that even better solution.
Yeah. I can't say enough good things about that GIF feature in Microsoft Teams. So my tip will be, since it's new and it's out there, get right on the ground floor and start promoting the use of GIFs in your conversations with you and your employees.
I'll make sure to include several GIFs in my replies to you.
Absolutely. If you want to get some work out of me done, just start communicating to me in GIFs. It really stands out over the usual emails and IMs I get.
It brings the fun into the team.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a quick way to kind of improve morale. And not only that, but it's a real good way to improve adoption of Teams. I mean, it sounds silly. And if it sounds silly to you, I would say, you know, just give it benefit of the doubt and try it. Because I know for us, you know, one of the biggest features for me is, honestly, I barely use IM, and I really didn't want to use Teams. And as soon as I saw that it allowed, you know, me to communicate in a style that I often do on Reddit, I was in. So, yeah.
I now understand how to communicate with Darren better.
There you go.
If it works for Darren, it'll work for your organization.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, we are at the end of our hour. I do want to thank our SMEs for taking time away from your day jobs to come talk to our customers. It's truly very important. And I want to thank our customers for joining us today. We love the questions and the dialogue and the opportunity to come talk to you. You can find this video posted on Microsoft.com/IT Showcase, along with a wealth of other content, technical case studies, business case studies, other videos and artifacts, all about how Microsoft does IT. And we also post productivity guides. It's how we get over 200,000 employees up to speed on the latest and greatest technologies every day. They are available for you to use in your own organizations for your own employees. And we have live events every week, so please join us again and bring your colleagues. Thank you.